antifaz que tu maldad cubría. Cayó para exhibirte tal como eres. Yo te creí distinta a otras mujeres y fui feliz pensando que eras mía. Pero aquel antifaz que por fortuna no fuera un antifaz de terciopelo, al descorrer de tu existencia el velo, me mostró tus infamias una a una. No vuelvas a cubrir otro rostro divino que nos brinde el destino para hacernos sufrir.
Matarte para qué. Welcome to this afternoon's broadcast of At the Root of It at Heritage Radio Network. We begin with this song, El Antifaz by Liberación y Miguel Galindo. Apropos for the Cinco de Mayo holiday today, which, as a gentle reminder, commemorates the Mexican Army's defeat of French forces at the Battle of Puebla on May 5th, 1862. Welcome and thank you to Edwards in Surrey, Virginia, specializing in smoked hams, turkeys, and sausages, our sponsor for today's show. I wanted to introduce a new part, segment of the show today as well, The Week in Wine, a news feed which streams news from the week previous. All things about wine, mainly communicated to me by two of my colleagues, Jamie Smith out in Vegas and Nicholas Palazzi here in New York. I begin this segment on a very sad note today with news that Miha Gradner, 27 years old, son and heir to leading Friulian winemaker Jasko Gradner, died Saturday evening in a motorcycle accident. Jasko is widely considered a leader among natural and radical winemakers in Italy, more specifically Friuli, spearheaded a movement of biodynamic and purely natural winemaking through a combination of old and new techniques with aging and fermentation vessels. Condolences to the family, which is a great loss in the wine world. On another note, effective on April 30th, 2009, the Tax Trade Bureau is withdrawing its earlier proposal to establish the Paso Robles West Side Viticulture Area within the existing Paso Robles Viticulture Area in San Luis Obispo County, California. The TTB notes that there is a marked lack of unanimity among the commenters concerning the appropriateness of establishing the proposed Paso Robles West Side Viticulture Area, stemming from the question about the name and conflicting arguments regarding the geographical features which make it that distinct. Petitions to establish 11 smaller viticulture areas within the Paso Robles area are currently under review. A German law court ruled Monday that sparkling wine produced in Germany from Italian Prosecco grapes can be labeled Italian. If the basic wine is imported from Italy into Germany bearing the label IGT, which stands for Indicazione Geografica Tipica, denoting the place of origin, this notation still applies after it has been processed into sparkling wine on German soil. The decisive factor was where the unprocessed wine originated from, not where the sparkling wine was made. So here we have yet another German wine rule to add to the already difficult to understand classification system in Germany. And lastly, tastings this week. Omni Wines Tasting is hosting their spring tasting at the Bari Hotel today from 12 to 6 p.m. Other wine tastings on Wednesday, May 6th, Acheval Ferrer, Montes, Caken, and other leading Argentinian and Chilean wineries will be featured at a tasting at Le Cirque restaurant from 1 to 4 p.m. And if you miss Wednesday's tasting, head to Consulate General of Argentina on West 56th Street on Friday, May 8th. Trade 1 to 3 p.m., general public 3 to 5 p.m. for a tasting on Argentina wines. We are going to take a quick break and be right back. Here's a new song out by the group Mika Snow called Burial. This is Erin Fitzpatrick at The Root of It at Heritage Radio Network. Today's show is featuring two interviews from German winemakers who I had the opportunity to visit with on my trip to the Rheingau and the Rheinhessen last week with Wines of Germany, otherwise the German Wine Institute, and in conjunction with the VDP, Weinburst Fair in Mainz. The VDP, or Winde Prädikat, is a membership of 200 leading wine estates in Germany, dedicated to making wines of the highest quality, and which also reflect distinctive character of their origin and grape variety. The member estates represent roughly 3% of the entire German viticulture area from nearly all of Germany's wine-growing regions, and are required to exceed legal norms of harvest and production, have their own special set of rules which they cater to. At least 70% of the state's acreage must be planted with traditional grape varieties, for example. And this is one reason why the percentage of Riesling under cultivation in the Mosel, the Naha, the Rheingau, where member states are concentrated, is significantly higher than the regional average. So this fair, this trade fair in the Weinburst annual, gives the opportunity for winemakers to share their recent releases, in this case 2008, many of which had just been bottled the week or two before the fair, and some of which had a blow-off of sulfur on the nose since they were so young. But overall, 2008 showing quite well, a very good vintage with high acidity due to longer ripening times. The ripeness levels not as high as the 2007 vintage, which was widely acclaimed in Germany. So their character, for most of the wines that I tasted, was less fruity and more racy, more crisp acidity. I had a chance to speak with Sophia Tanisch, whose family has a long history of winemaking in the Mosel, while at the fair. She was kind enough to give me a few minutes. The Weingut Tanisch has been owned by the Tanisch family since the 1600s, mid-1600s, and Horg Tanisch, considered one of the rising stars of the Mosel region, has run the estate since he took over from his father in 2001, and beautifully cultivates and emphasizes the strength of the Riesling grape in their wines. Tanisch strives for a high-quality, limited-production harvest that produces a great classic Mosel Riesling, and with only 5.5 hectares under vine, produces about 60,000 bottles a year. Here is what Sophia had to say during my interview with her. So I'm here this afternoon at the Weinburst Fair in Mainz with Sophia Tanisch from the Mosel, and we were just talking about the 2008 vintage. Sophia, how is the 08 vintage in the Mosel?
Yeah, so I like it very much. It is a very classic, very clean, pure vintage, and a little acidity pronounced, but very light, elegant, and well, delicate if you like. And the alcohols are a little lower than in the previous years. For example, 06 was extremely rich and round, and now we have really the opposite. And I think it makes it very interesting when you have stylistic, very different vintages. So everybody can pick his or her favorite wine.
Great. And I noticed in your wines that you keep a very traditional style. I noticed that several German winemakers that we've seen here at the fair have been pushing the dry trocken style, which certainly there is room for. However, we do like to keep with things that Germany can only do with respect to their wines here and make them distinct on an international market. Why do you think some winemakers are really pushing the dry style of German wine?
I don't know why they do it, but I think, especially in the Mosel area, the Riesling brings out a lot more elegancy and fruit if you have other wine has a little residual sugar. And to my opinion, dry wines are produced in the whole world, and we don't want to do what everybody else is doing. I prefer the elegant, light and delicate wine with low alcohol, and these are my favorite anyway. And they are niche products. You either love them or you don't.
Do you think the stereotype that has prevailed
internationally with respect to German wine only being sweet has caused this push for dry wines on the international market.
Yes, it could be a reason. And some people might think it is cool or sophisticated to have a dry wine or a special grape variety that is just cool and chic. And but I think you shouldn't go by the analysis. A wine has to have so many grams of residual sugar and so many grams of acidity, and then that's a perfect wine. It just doesn't work like this. And think you have to see the grape variety, the area, the terroir, the wind, the soil, and the kind of the wine. That's it. And you don't have a recipe how you make the wine.
And speaking of other varietals, I tasted all Riesling at your booth today. Are you experimenting with any other different varietals besides Riesling?
No, I'm a big Riesling fan, and I think our area is very famous for Riesling, and we don't have any other grape variety at all. No others, just Riesling, because to me it's a queen of the grape varieties, white grape varieties. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much. We're a big fan of your wines, and just thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayfield. We are back at the studio at Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Restaurant in Brooklyn. If you are just joining us now, we are broadcasting today two interviews with winemakers that I conducted while traveling in the Rheingau and the Rheinhessen last week with the wines of Germany. I was fortunate to have the opportunity to visit the Gunderlach estate in the Rheingau one afternoon and taste through 10 wines from the 2007 and 2008 vintage at Gunderlach, and get into conversation with Fritz Hasselbach, who's the winemaker. We spoke a bit about the German classification system, as many in the wine industry and out of the industry know is quite difficult to understand, and German winemakers are trying to come to their own conclusion of how to classify the wines in a way that is easy for the consumer to understand, and whether that means joining forces between European and German laws through unified EU classification system is in discussion. But he had his own points of view on that, and also spoke with him about the biodynamic wave of interest in Germany and across the world for that matter. And here's what he had to say, introducing Fritz from Weingut Gunderlach.
We've just finished up a tasting with Fritz Hasselbach at Gunderlach Estate. Finished the tasting with the 2007 Nackenheim Rothenburg Birnauslese. Only 180 cases produced, so we're very, very lucky to have a taste of that this afternoon. Hi, Fritz, how are you?
I'm good, thank you very much.
Good, thank you for a most lovely visit. That was a highlight of the trip.
Okay, and that sounds very good to me, and I really appreciate it.
We had gone through a few questions over the tasting with respect to the European community going towards a classification system where everyone is involved from Italy to France to Germany, trying to get a hold on the classifications within the different countries. How do you see Germany responding to that?
I think the German wine law is not easy. I mean, a classification on the sweetness level of the grapes, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't tell the customers anything about the taste of a wine. So in my opinion, a classification of the vineyards is very, very important. And the terroir, besides the must weight of a grape, a terroir gives a it's very important how a wine will taste later on when it's bottled.
And you mentioned that you've had some influence from the Burgundy classification system, mm-hmm. and the way that you're labeling is as informative as possible, but yet straightforward with respect to the Qualitätswein and how that's portrayed on the label. Is that correct?
That's correct, and I think we need to simplify the declaration of the wines in Germany a lot. So we have cabinet wines, we have Spätlese wines, and we have Auslese wines, and all these wines can be made in a fruity style, in an off-dry style, and in a dry style. And I think this is too complicated for the customers. That's why Gunderloch decided a couple of years ago to use the name Qualitätswein only for the dry style of wines. To the cabinet we use for off-dry style, form of fruity or sweet style, and Spätlesers, Auslesers, and the higher end noble sweet wines, they are always come in a fruity, in a sweet style.
Well, we'll do our best on the U.S. side to help consumers understand that, because as you know, we are very, very big supporters of Riesling as much as we can. I know the U.S. imports seemingly have gone down just due to the economic crisis this past year, but overall it's quite strong in terms of distribution and exports to the U.S. Is this correct?
No, actually, it went down a little bit. Sales in the United States went down a little bit. But we are still satisfied with the U.S. market. And what I like is that the German Rieslings go wonderful with the food in the restaurants in the United States. Yes, so wine and food pairing. Whenever I'm visiting the United States, I like to go to restaurants and see how the German Riesling go with the food. Mm-hmm. And I think the restaurants in the United States or the chefs of the restaurant, they helped a lot to build up the reputation for the German Rieslings, mm-hmm. because these people in the United States understood how the German Riesling, how well the German Riesling go with their style of food.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I know that my wine colleagues and myself love Riesling, as do chefs, and it's really called a wine lover's wine, essentially. Yeah. But more and more people are becoming accustomed to the different styles that Riesling can give. Right. And I'm going to switch gears just a minute here while we just before we finish up and ask about biodynamics, how many German winemakers are converting their styles and their vineyards. I know it takes quite a bit of time to move into that style of farming, but is it something that people are looking at and changing viticulture practices in the vineyards, not necessarily only biodynamics, but organic?
So organic farming or biodynamic farming is getting more and more popular in Germany. It's not easy because due to the microclimate, or I mean vineyards which are close to the river and in the neighborhood of a river, we have a lot of moisture. And this moisture doesn't support organic farming. So it depends what the wine grower wants to make. If he wants to make more dry wines, he need clean and healthy grapes. If he goes more to the sweeter style of wines, botrytis is really welcome. So with the organic farming and botrytis, you can make wonderful wines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on where you are, what style you want, and
exactly.
Being as least interventionist as possible in the vineyards. Right. It sounds like you've converted a bit of your style from when you inherited this originally,
right.
How you've already changed the winemaking in the vineyard. Yeah.
So if I can add another word. So our three children, they are very much on the organic side, mm-hmm. and they have two or three vineyards in our winery. They try to make to manage it on the biodynamic or on the organic side, mm-hmm. and they understand how difficult it is.
Really?
Yes, but they will find a way, I'm sure. And I like the idea of organic winemaking very, very much. Mm-hmm. But it's not easy in our area, in our region, because we are very close to this river Rhine,
sure.
and we have a lot of moisture mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. air, mm-hmm. and that doesn't support organic farming.
But it's always good to think out of the box and experiment with new techniques and continually improve, and that's what's very respectable as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we already do a sort of kind of organic farming. Yes, mm-hmm. we don't use any chemical fertilizers. We don't use weed killers, and
right.
so on. And that helps a lot to save the environment.
Well, you can certainly taste it in the wines as well.
Yes, that's right. Yes,
very clean, very pure expressions of the terroir and of the great Riesling. So.
That's right. Yes, mm-hmm. I agree with you.
Right. Yeah. I know you have to run, but thank you so much for having us. It's been such a pleasure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Likewise, thank you for visiting us, and it was always nice to meet you,
good.
To see you.
Cheers.
Thanks so much for joining this afternoon. Thank you to our sponsor, Edwards in Surrey, Virginia, for Smoked Hams. I look forward to meeting with you next week. This song is called Solid Gold by The Golden Filter.